Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also archive these programs. We also give you a link to our guest's website so that you can gather more information and do some research of your own as well, especially based upon maybe what you've heard here on the program. We certainly hope that you will do that. Today we have an exciting program, I think, because it's something that we've talked about many times on this program, especially with many of our guests, in light of especially what happened 8 years ago in terms of here in the United States, the great economic downturn. Some call it the Great Recession. Some say it was worse than the Great Depression. I don't know. My folks didn't think so, and they both lived through that. Even as children, they don't remember this as bad as that. Nonetheless, today we're going to talk about the art of work. And Hiroshi Ayata, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for inviting me to talk about the book Art of Work, written by Ryuho Okawa.
This is an interesting subject. And, of course, we're talking to you all the way. You're in Japan.
Oh, not now.
You're not in
Japan
today.
I'm from
today.
Japan, but I'm in New York right
now.
Oh,
okay. I was under the impression. Nonetheless, 3 hours difference and all that. I'm curious, first of all, in light of this work, the art of work, the differences, and specifically, but especially because you are from Japan, and I'm certain that you have had experiences of other cultures as well. The work ethic and the work culture of the United States, or if you want to broaden it, the West, is it seems to be quite different in philosophy, in attitude and so forth, than many other parts of the world. I think about Europe and what I've heard. I've not experienced it myself. But from what I understand, they have, I think it's like 4 or 6 weeks of vacation that they must take each year. Whereas we in this country, we will get 2 weeks of vacation that if we can, we'll take it. So tell me about that juxtaposition in terms of all of in terms of this subject, as far as your perspective is concerned, and this particular philosophical look at our working habits, but our attitudes about work, and what work really is.
Okay. So of course I'm from Japan, and actually, I used to work in a trading company called Mitsubishi Corporation, based in Japan, but with a large trade network, including United States, Canada, and Chile, and so on. Now I'm working as one of the staff of Happy Science. So we used to sell a metal, but now I'm used to I am handling happiness, but anyway, so certainly the work ethics and customs in Japan may be different, and we put more emphasis on organizational work, and it's a little bit difficult for us to take long vacations. That is true, but at the same time, I feel that there are common parts in working in Japan and overseas too. And nowadays, Japan is more internationalized, so people can understand more Western way of doing businesses. But anyway, so probably the worry and problems we may face in the workplace may be quite similar, such as a human relationship with the boss, how to nicely deal with your subordinate, and how you can fulfill your life through working, or something like that. And I'm not the exception. I used to work hard to fulfill my kind of a dream in Mitsubishi Corporation, but I had a very serious problem with my superior. I was not happy, and that was a moment I encountered the philosophy of Ryuho Okawa, especially about workplace and human relationships.
What was it that impressed you about him or the philosophy that you made this, what some would consider, rather drastic change?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, yeah. For instance, whenever you try to work in the businesses, we tend to focus too much on the making profits or achieving goals. And if you focus on the making profit and achieving goals, as you work harder, you get more frustrated, or you get more tensions, and you get more competitive, something like that. And probably I was caught in such a trap. But by learning from Okawa, I realized that even in a workplace, so we are using our own mindset or heart, and it is very important to understand other person, each other, and the essence of work is not only achieving your goal, but the essence of work is just like giving love to your wife, giving love to your friends, giving love to your friends. The essence of work is giving love to others. In other words, make your customer happier, make your boss happier, make your company happy. And that will lead to make society happier. That is what I got from Ryuho Okawa. I got a very big picture of the cycle of giving love in this society.
A lot of people get rather confused, if you will, when it comes to the form in which that takes. A lot of people aren't really certain as to how they should express that love that you talk about. And people talk also of the fact that you really, as much as you want to and mm-hmm. as much as you think you are giving unconditional love, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. really all love, at least on the human level, mm-hmm. there's always a condition, and it may be really minor, and you may not mm-hmm. put a lot of emphasis on it, but mm-hmm. but there's always, it seems as though, and mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though there's always a reciprocation that we tend to expect from others, and even if we don't get it, mm-hmm. We do mm-hmm. tend to have, you know, certain levels of resentment and mm-hmm. so forth. Mm-hmm. And as much as we want to say, yes, I have unconditional love for, et cetera, mm-hmm. If it's not reciprocated, you know, we feel outed or put off or we're offended and so forth. Like, well, my gosh, I did all this for them and just absolutely no acknowledgement. You know, I should have at least been given a thank you. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, wait a minute, but that's not unconditional love. You do it because you choose to do it. Not mm-hmm. for anything in return. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh yeah. So you're actually I understand you're talking about giving love in business.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that in the context of business, because a lot of people don't think of love in business. And I will say that when I first got into the broadcast industry back in 1980, and I was hired by a radio station. It was actually a Christian radio station of all things. Mm-hmm. And I was really having a great time. I was just loving, really loving what I was doing, to the point where I said to my boss, and when I shared this with others, they say, you should never say that to your boss. Mm-hmm. I said to my boss, you know, if I could survive and pay the rent and put food on the table and so forth, and in other words, have all of my needs met in that regard, I would do this. I would volunteer. I'd do this for free. I love doing this so much. This, I you know, if everything else was taken care of for me, hey, I'm yours. Let's do this. I'm having a great time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know a lot of people don't feel that way. And as I mentioned earlier, eight years ago when we had that downturn economically, and I know it was global, mm-hmm. but here in the States, hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought was, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about love in the workplace, mm-hmm. including love of the job or the work that you do, that you don't see it as a job, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I never thought of giving love in workplace before I encountered Ryuho Oka's teaching. And maybe I was rather more focused on show my ability, that I'm very excellent and skillful, something like that. And I focused on success. And however, as you work harder and harder, you cannot get your result. And I focus on my own perspectives. So boss didn't agree to my way of doing businesses, and we started to have a trouble with each other. However, by finding out true essence of work is the same as love, I started to realize that, oh, okay, even in the workplace, there are counterparts. And all of them have a kind of a mind and heart, a feeling. So everybody has been given a freedom to think and act anything. So each one of them has a kind of own righteousness. And as long as you stick to your own righteousness, you have a trouble and your business will not work well. Oh, okay. Then I started to realize that I need to think about other person's desires and other person's goals and other person's happiness, especially when it comes to my superior. The superior have a responsibility to accomplish his own responsibility. And I share the same responsibility as his because I belong to the same department. So I realized that I need to understand what his goal is, what his desire is, what his way of doing business is. Just as to harmonize relationship with your friends or families. So the important point is essentially the same. First, to try to understand. Then I started to gradually realize that doing a good job for thinking about recipient of the business is very important too. So I started to realize he needed quite a quick report, a quick response, rather than I focusing on my own business. So I started to serve on that part first. Then I started to seek my own job. It didn't work well, but as you continue to try understanding and trying, my relationship with my superior changed drastically. So, and I became very successful in the business too. So, that kind of idea was given from this book, chapter 5 of this book, on Work and Love. Ryuho Oka says that work is very similar to love. So just as love to people, the work also exists between people. So the essence of work is same as the essence of love. So that's how I understood the important point to achieve success in business. That is, to give love to other people. Does it answer to your questions?
Well, it certainly does. I find it interesting, too, that especially with this focus on this particular... Are you still with me?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with this focus on work, a lot of folks don't really want to focus too much on those kinds of things because it's part of their it's one third of their day, and the other third, of course, is spent usually sleeping, and then the other 8 hours are split between getting up in the morning and getting ready to go to work, uh-huh. and then coming home from work and getting ready to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So the majority of your waking hours are spent at your job, and you would think that. And I remember my father telling me that I should find a job that I love doing because I'm going to be doing it for a long time. And I'm very fortunate that I did just that very early on in my life. And I try to encourage people to do the same. And if you're not in a place where you want to be, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, if it doesn't give you some level of satisfaction and peace at the same time, then you need to reconsider what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I think that that's extremely important. You know, I'm curious, too. I want to get into the aspects also. We'll come back to, we'll certainly come back to the heart of work. But I want to talk a little bit more because I know there are folks who are listening who have heard you mention, of course, Ryuho Okawa.
You can call me Okawa.
Ryuho.
It's not difficult for you to pronounce Ryuho. Yeah.
Ryuho.
Ryuho, but Okawa. Okawa will be okay.
All right. Okawa. And you've mentioned him several times, and I mispronounced it several times. But you've also mentioned happy science, the happy science. And this is, for some folks, this is what they would consider to be a new philosophy. Something that has been introduced into the mix, and I'm curious about this philosophy and how it came about. And it's still relatively new from the standpoint of Okawa's bringing it forth, shall we say, in reference to, and I'm going to ask for your correct pronunciation, on El Cantare.
Uh-huh.
The Lord El Cantare, who is the rest of us is still God.
Uh-huh.
Would that be correct?
Yeah, you can understand El Cantare as a universal God and source of everything,
mm-hmm.
and kind of just like you can imagine that the huge tree of life in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all of the energy flows from that. A source, El Cantare. Yeah. All of us are part of this huge tree of universe.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us are connected to each other. So even you, Richard, and myself are connected. So even if you hate somebody, he is a part of you. So everyone is connected to the huge tree of life called El Cantare. And El Cantare, of course, at the core part, there's a consciousness who continue to look, love all the human beings and all living beings and universe and think about, care about all living beings throughout the kind of history of the universe. Yeah. And a part of El Cantare come down on earth and teach us and guide us from time to time. That's how history is formed in this planet too. If I dare to simplify my story, that this is like this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So this is not the first time.
Yes.
Of the manifestation, shall we say, of El Cantare. This has been going on for thousands and thousands of years, actually going back some, I guess, 17,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even more than that.
Yes.
And so we're looking at this from the standpoint of folks who are going to want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly you've given an excellent explanation as far as you know, that which is has brought about the universe and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of folks, especially in the human mind, they are looking for some kind of structure. They're looking for some specifics as to, like, for example, the tenets, if you will, of the philosophy. What are the basic beliefs? You know, you have, for example, in Judaism, you have, for example, the Ten Commandments, along with you also have the 613 laws of the Old Testament. In the New Testament, in Christianity, you have basically you have two laws, but they're all kind of summed up in the one: love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love God and love your neighbor. Well, you can't love your neighbor if you don't love God, because God, you know, we're all created by and from, and we're all connected to, and so you can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk, if we can, a little bit about the makeup of the structure, if you will, the fundamentals of the philosophy of happy science.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so fundamental philosophy of happy science is, well, everyone of us, human race, are the spiritual beings with eternal life. And we are all given eternal life. And we are kind of a traveler to reach to the goal, to the destination. That is a primordial God or primordial Buddha, whatever you believe. And we are in the process of such eternal growth. And in order for us to grow, we come down on earth and conduct soul training, maybe 50, 60, 70 years every time, and go back to spirit world and come down on earth again and grow and grow. And we know that we all of us, when we come down on earth, all of us, we make a life plan on earth. That includes the occupation, life partner, and so on. And Ryuho Okawa discloses all the secret about our life and the secret about the universe. And in order for us to grow spiritually, nicely, Ryuho Okawa suggests us to explore our own right mind. All of us have a divine, great nature deep inside us, but it's not matured yet. But we all of us have such a divine nature, so we are given a chance to polish our soul. And in order for us to achieve growth and happiness, Ryuho Okawa suggests us to practice four principles to explore our own right mind. The first one is quite universal and same as almost similar to Christian teaching, is love. It says God loves us. We have same nature of God. So as you love others and give love to others, you become happy. So, but if you misunderstand about the nature of love and try to get love from others, you continuously seek return, and use continue suffering. So you must understand about true essence of love is in giving. And second principle is about wisdom. As Proverbs says, wisdom will set you free. It is very important to understand the total picture of this life and laws of the mind and the meaning of life. So And through our life experiences, we explore, accumulate wisdom to make ourselves grow and happier. So wisdom is very important. And third principle is principle of self-reflection. That is to purify your mind, to become transparent, and which make you possible to communicate with heavenly soul, so that you may not misunderstand, or you may not take the wrong course of life. And self-reflection, through self-reflection, you can get wisdom, and that will help you grow. And fourth principle is a principle of progress. So through by practicing giving love, wisdom, and self-reflection, you can grow. And you can make other people happier. So Ryuho Oka suggests us to have a kind of a good, big picture that you give love to others and create a wonderful world in this planet. And so where everyone can love each other, cherish each other, and trust each other. So by practicing all these four principles, you can grow unlimitedly. And you can make yourself happier and you can make other people happier. Yes, this is roughly the four principles Ryuho Oka teaches us.
I'm curious about where you come from philosophically. And
yes.
In terms of your upbringing, if you will, and that how it sort of prepared you, if you will, for mm-hmm. For this journey now into the happy science.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean myself?
Yes.
So I was born in a kind of ordinary family, but not so religious. But my mother is religious, but my father was not so religious. So so basically, I could accept existence of a real world, another world, but my friend and colleagues didn't. So, and I learned about Buddhism to a certain extent, but not so deep. However, by encountering Ryuho Oka's teachings, I started to gradually understand and the laws of the mind and rule of universe. And it took me maybe several years for me to comprehend and totally, but since Ryuho Okawa suggested us to read many different kinds of books, including Buddhism, Christianity, and Muslim, so I broadened my perspective and I got a confidence about this philosophy of happy science. So then I started to practice it, and afterwards I started to devote my life into this activity. So this is my rough history of path I took in this life.
And, you know, here in the United States, of course, we have as one of our founding documents the Constitution. And in our Constitution, it talks about our right to life, our right to liberty. However, it does not give us the right to happiness, but the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Is happiness within the happy science, is that something that is achievable, or is it something that we are constantly striving for? In other words, is there a state at which we can rise to within the happy science, or mm-hmm. will we continue to practice, if you will, as you put it, with the principles in order to have glimpses of that happiness?
Oh, yeah. So this is a very good point. So I would say happiness has both aspects. So, and I would say that we should always strive to improve the quality of our happiness. So, but anyway, so happiness, true happiness lies in your mind. So, depending on how you perceive the information and relationship you have now, so you may be able to feel happiness and peace in your mind. So it is very important for us to practice in this perspective. And for that perspective, you can achieve happiness now. However, this is not kind of a goal. So you can deepen your happiness and you can pursue further to improve your happiness. And in the meantime, In the happiness, I would say there are two aspects of happiness. That is happiness of in peace, peace in mind. And the other aspect, I would say, is a happiness in achieving something or growing yourself. Maybe you must have worked very hard and improved your skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you could achieve something, you must have felt deep pleasure, I guess. So this must be the happiness you can feel through making efforts. Mm. So I would say there are two directions of happiness.
Two directions.
Yes, roughly, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Growth and harmony.
Growth and harmony.
Yeah. Progress and harmony, I would say.
Well, I want to continue, if you don't mind. I would really like to continue this conversation further in our next segment and yes. Go a little bit more in depth into some of the other aspects of that which, shall we say, followers of the principles uh-huh. of the philosophy of the happy science uh-huh. and continue doing that. My guest is, and is it pronounced Hiroshi Ayata?
Hiroshi Ayata, yes. You can call me Henry.
I understand. I will also say, too, that's something else that is sort of a bugaboo for me, and that is that I feel it's so important that we pronounce one another's names correctly, even if it's a foreign name, because uh-huh. that's your name. That's how you identify yourself and others identify you, and I find it a little disconcerting when someone wants to change it because they can't pronounce it. I understand why, but, mm-hmm. And I certainly want to make every effort to pronounce it correctly. Nonetheless,
effort. Actually, in Japanese, the name Hiroshi has its own meaning.
Okay.
Yeah. Hiroshi means broad-minded.
And the last name?
Yaita.
Yaita means?
Well, it's a kind of arrow board to protect from arrow. Oh. You protect your house from arrow.
Ah. Ayoshi, yeah. Hayoshi Ayata, I want to thank you so much. Stay with us. We're going to continue our program here. I'm Richard Dugan.
Thank you very much.
What's that?
Thank you for trying to understand my name.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's part of what the mission of this program is about, is so that we all can reach a level of understanding of one another. We may not agree with everything that other people talk about, but if we can at least understand, have that understanding. Yeah. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you so much for staying with us here on the program. And we are talking with Hiroshi Ayata, and we're talking about the happy science. We're also talking about the heart of learning how to love the work that you do. And that's extremely important from my perspective, Hiroshi, because if we don't put into the work that we are doing, and usually it's for others, we're usually employed by someone else to carry out a task, whether it be to create a product or to carry out a service for others. Mm-hmm. I guess the better way to put it is this. I have been searching the better part of my adult life mm-hmm. for a Mexican dish called a tamale. Mm-hmm. That my grandmother used mm-hmm. to make, and they were fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I've searched and I have tasted and tasted and tasted all different kinds. All right. And I haven't found one yet that comes close to what my grandmother used to make, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my wife told me some years ago, she said, and you will never find the tamales like your grandmother made because uh-huh. there's one element missing that uh-huh. nobody else can put into that recipe, and mm-hmm. that's her love.
Wow, fantastic story you have.
So the same thing I think would be true am I not correct, with the work that we do, if we don't love what we're doing and we're putting in the frustration and the agitation and all of those other things into that work, gee, if my grandmother's tamales tasted that good with the love she put into it, can you imagine how bad they would taste if she made them with anger and frustration and fear and all of that kind of energy?
Yeah.
So using that example in our workaday worlds, it seems to me no wonder why we come out with products and services that are so inferior sometimes, because people just don't like what they're doing.
Yeah, that's true. So that reminds me of the story of the excellent kind of hotel clerk, hotel, people who can serve excellent services to the guests. So when if you interview to them, one of the most foremost hotel men who can receive guests nicely and who can achieve the best satisfaction rate, what is the secret of his success? When you ask what is the secret of his success, he would say that is customers' smiling faces and customers' pleasure, customers' comfort. They always focus on this single point. He didn't focus on kind of a profits or appreciation or higher salaries or fame. He only focused purely on the satisfaction and happiness of the people. And whenever he does nice services, he can naturally feel pleasure. That's why he tried to improve his service by himself. Probably, Richard, you must be feeling the same thing in your work.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I do. I honestly do. And it is frustrating to others around me, especially those close to me, who tell me that I'm underpaid. I'm not charging enough for the service that I am that I am providing. Mm-hmm. And I look at them and I go, well, wait a minute. but that's not the goal here. You know, that is not, at least it's not my goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I would I like to have 5, 6, 7 digits before the decimal point, in my bank account? Sure, I would. I would love that. Would be fantastic. Is that really realistic in that respect to really have that? I shared in a previous interview, Hiroshi, I shared this.
Yeah.
That and this is sort of an analogy. There were these two gentlemen who liked to go out to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And one gentleman, he would pick up the tab and he would pay, and he'd reach into his pocket and he would pay. He would pay the bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they went on their way, and they got together again for another meal, and same thing. He paid for the bill, reached in his pocket, and had the exact amount and paid. And then a third meal came along, and they had the wonderful meal and conversation, and he did the same thing, reached in his pocket and pulled out the exact amount. Mm-hmm. The other guy's very curious about this. I mean, he was, great, of course, appreciative of the fact this guy was paying the bill. But he says, it's very interesting. I noticed that, you know, when we've gone out and you've gotten the bill, you've always had exactly the correct amount in your pocket to pay for the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I found this bottle and I rubbed it and this genie came out. And the genie asked me to, I said, you can have one wish.
Mm-hmm.
One wish. And, you know, and you can take your time, think about it and so forth. Mm-hmm. So he thought about it long and hard.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with he came up with the idea, I could wish for $1 million, I could wish for this, that, and the other thing. He says, I wish that I would always have the correct amount of money for anything that I ever needed. Mm-hmm. Now, that is way beyond asking for $1 million. But it wasn't something mm-hmm. that he was flaunting. You know, it wasn't like, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a car and I'll have exactly the right amount to pay for the car and then this house and this boat and this plane. And all. No, he was, you know, very humble about the whole thing. And this is one of the mm-hmm. things that this guy, you know, this is the wish he made. And mm-hmm. I thought about that long and hard. And I thought, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, if you think about it from a natural standpoint, nature,
mm-hmm.
none of the animals have safety nets. They don't have big mm-hmm. bank accounts and savings accounts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about that aspect of our work and our satisfaction uh-huh. with it and so forth. Share that yeah. with us from the standpoint of the happy science.
I see. Thank you very much. And in this book, How to Work, Ryuho Oka points out a very important point about the relationship between us and work. And as the subtitle says, 10 Keys to Living Your Calling. So Ryuho Okawa point out, whenever you do a good job, you may feel satisfied or proud and feel deep kind of happiness. So it is a proof God imbued a desire to work with us. And it is a fundamental part of being human. And animals also work, as you know. Animals can instinctively do the same thing to survive. Like lions hunt other animals, and the sheep grows a kind of hares, and chickens bears eggs. However, they do all these things only, but they don't do other different things. They just repeat and repeat. But when you look at other human beings, so we can create something different, and we can create something new through our effort and work. And whenever we create something new, and we create something, you feel deep pleasure. So Okawa points out, this is a pleasure God intended us to experience through your work. So God has given us a chance to work, and God has given us work to share his pleasure, that is pleasurable creation with us.
Mm.
So in that sense, work is very important thing and essential thing for us to feel happiness and pleasure. And work is not the kind of a torture. Rather than that, work is a gift from God. That is what Oka is pointing out in the chapter one. What do you think about it?
I like it. I like it very much. It's very intriguing, and I know that a lot of folks are going to resonate with that. I think that that we need to consider other possibilities. When I think about the economy, and I'm talking now in a broad sense, economics, the economic formula, whether you're in Japan, whether you're in the United States, whether you're in Europe, Africa, Asia, it doesn't matter where you are. My one question has always been for years, especially, and it stems more out of my frustrations over mm-hmm. the economic model that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
Who said that this was the only model to use?
Hmm.
And so when you talk about the perspectives, the philosophical perspectives of work from the happy science perspective,
mm-hmm.
who said that the current model is the only way to mm-hmm. view what you're doing? Why not consider this particular philosophical bent on going to work and so forth? And mm-hmm. it seems to me too, Hiroshio, that this philosophy can actually be taken out of the workplace as well. I mean, it's not exclusive too. I know that that's the focus, but that mm-hmm. this can be expanded into other parts of our lives, can't it?
Yes, yes, that's right.
Tell us a little more about, and I'm wondering if, because we have the time. I mean, there's no question that we have the time to do this.
Yes.
Can you go through the process of sharing with us your, I'd like to go through the four principles of the happy science, one at a time. Again, give us the name of it, if you will, a real brief description, and I would like to kind of dive into them a little deeper if we can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So what is the first principle?
Principle of love.
Okay. And we did talk a little bit about that and what that means. We asked. Mm-hmm. We even talked about unconditional love earlier in the program as well.
Yeah.
Is there a particular example in our world, in, let's say, in nature, the natural world, that is a good example of that kind of love that we might struggle with as human beings to express?
Mm-hmm. Well, so whenever, of course, as a human beings, as you pointed out earlier, whenever you do something for other people, we expect something as a reward. Such as when you prepare a nice birthday present to your wife, you must have expected kind of a words of appreciation and words that she liked that present. But when she didn't give you such a word, you get disappointed. So, and this is kind of a expectation of a reward. However, if you continue to concentrate on thinking about her needs and thinking about her pleasure deeply, and you can find out the real needs of hers, then you can prepare a nice one. And whenever you when you give her such a nice best one, probably she will have a deep pleasure. So, rather than focusing on getting rewards, if you focusing on something, focusing on improving your quality, focusing on other people's happiness, you can perform nicer love to others. And by practicing nicer love, you get nicer the reward. That is a pleasure of giving love. And such a reward will be given from heavenly world as a light or as a feeling of deep pleasure.
Hmm. All right. I understand that, and I'm going to kind of leave it there for that perspective. And if folks, if you didn't quite catch that, why don't you play that section of the interview back again and glean from it again, or even you can go to happy-science.org, and there's more information you can find there, all kinds of books and information, of course, about Mr. Okawa and the happy science philosophy. Let's go on to principle number two.
Mm-hmm. Well, so this is another second principle, is the principle of wisdom. So the most important wisdom is about wisdom of the true essence of a human. So nowadays, people become too materialistic. And if you don't know the real meaning of your life, we tend to focus only on what you can see and we can perceive. And you misunderstand, as long as you get good money, it should be okay. As long as you can deceive other people, even if you tell a lie to others, as long as you get something, it is okay. However, if you continue to do that, gradually you become devastated, and you feel you cannot feel satisfactions, and probably you will get negative responses from other people. So, after you die, you will know that you will go into the world which represent your nature of thought. So by knowing that the truth, probably you can choose the different different directions. So and gradually you can avoid causing unnecessary troubles. And okay, let me go back to the topics about work in terms of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you do work, for instance, if you have a deep understanding about true nature of work and true core concept, Ryuhooka, for instance, it is very important for you to grasp the core mission of your work. That is in chapter 2. And then you can do a nice job. So just as a, it is very good to get the core mission and big objective of the company, or mid-sized objective of the company, and small objective, that is your own work. If you can have a big pictures, you will not misunderstand the right concept. And to let you understand more properly about this story, let me cite the kind of a parable Mr. Peter Drucker said. So it's about a carpenter who are accumulating, piling a block.
Mm-hmm.
There are three different people. One carpenter is piling a block, but he doesn't feel, seems to be happy. And the way he does is not so efficient. And he asked the carpenter, "What are you doing?" "Oh, yeah, I'm piling a block. Bricks, piling a bricks." Yeah. And he saw another carpenter who is doing the same job, but he is doing a little better. But also he is not he doesn't look so happy. And he asked the carpenter, "What are you doing?" "Oh yeah, well, I'm building a wall. I'm building a wall." "Oh, okay, I see." And there's third carpenter, who is working efficiently, nicely, and with a happy, and he works so diligently, and he looks very happy. And he asked the carpenter, "What are you doing?" "Oh yes, I'm building a church." Mm-hmm. So, by knowing the bigger concept, you can understand what you are doing. And what your work leads to, give you the result.
But that can be a difficult thing to see, to really see the big picture of things. We're not always given that. And I'm wondering sometimes with the attitude and sometimes the mentality of our supervisors or the CEO or the owner of the company, they don't want everybody to know. It's almost along the lines of, if I may use the example of the Manhattan Project, where every mm-hmm. person that was working on the Manhattan Project had no clue what they were building. They mm-hmm. because everything was compartmentalized and everybody was kept separate from everybody else. And mm-hmm. you just did what you were told to do and build what you're told to build and let mm-hmm. them worry about what piece of the puzzle it is and, mm-hmm. and that it fits together. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there isn't even a biblical passage that without a vision, the people perish, that mm-hmm. if you can't envision what it is
mm-hmm.
that your work is sort of to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
there is a diminishment of who and what you are,
mm-hmm.
and you can't give your all to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've worked at a few other jobs other than in radio, and the comparison or the compare and contrast was that in radio, at least in my job, I could mm-hmm. never go home thinking, "Oh, I'm finished for the day."
Mm-hmm.
because there's always something more. Whereas I worked, for example, in a warehouse, and I used to go through the warehouse and I would pull product and I would pack it and ship it off. Mm-hmm. And knowing that at the end of the day, oh, all of the orders had been fulfilled and all of the orders had been shipped and I'm done. But in this particular business, there is no done. It's like you just kind of come to the end of your cycle, so to speak, you know. And I think that I think that's a hard one for folks, whether it's with work. And then if you take it outside of the workplace, maybe in the grander perspective of the grand design, it's hard for us to know where our place is, what our function is, our purpose in life. I'm wondering too, in regard to this aspect of wisdom, if trying to find one's purpose in life is something that that we should be also sort of considering, if you will. In other words, I really enjoy the work I'm doing, whatever it is. I'm having a great time, but I don't really feel that. You know, it's like it's not clicked. I still feel like there's still something missing. And I don't know if this is really, as much as I love what I'm doing, I don't know if this is really my purpose in life. And am I just supposed to be, if I can use these metaphors, if I'm just supposed to be a cog, if you will, in all of the wheels? Or am I supposed to be a big player in this grand design? You know? I don't know what my role is per se. And how does someone go about finding, where do you find the wisdom to find your life's purpose?
Well, of course, it's up to each one of us to find out your own life purpose and mission in life. It's up to us. But it is to help you find out your purpose and mission. Ryu Hoka tried to tell the universal truth about the purpose of life and missions in general. And Ryuho Okawa made an extensive spiritual search about people's life, past life, and how he reincarnated, and his future will be. And through the such informations, he accumulated wisdom. So by knowing these truth, you can understand about the system of your reincarnation. Then that will be a good hint for you to find out the purpose. And however, in order for you to find out your true mission and true life purposes, you need to deeply reflect upon yourself. So that leads you to go into the third principle, the principle of self-reflection, to reflect upon your thought and deeds, that what is your deep desire to accomplish, or what is your tendency of your behavior, and what does it mean? By knowing about laws of karma or something, that will become a good hint for you to find out the life purpose of this life.
It sounds to me like meditation might fall into this category. Is that a method of self-reflection?
Yes. Self-reflection is one method of meditation, I would say. Yeah. So in order for you to go deep into your mind, so it is important for you to calm down your mind, breathing deeply, and start meditating. And there are many different kinds of meditation, but I would say self-reflection is one of the most important meditation practice for us to find out deep happiness and find out our life purposes.
Is there a particular meditation, if you will, for us to maybe start with in terms of this self-reflection?
Self-reflections?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Easiest way to try to look back at the end of the day. Please try to calm down your mind and reflect upon yourself. if you give love to others, and what point you focus on, or how was the result, or before you start the day, you must have decided something, and you can reflect on you can do nicely about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so Ryuho Okawa has given us important guideline for us to go through the self-reflections. So one of the most famous one, that is a practice taught by Shakyamuni Buddha, is kind of called Eightfold Path. So there are 8 points, 8 aspects for us to look back. The first point is when you see the things correctly in the right way. If you second point is if you think in the right way. Did you take love from others? Well, did you put too much emphasis on the desires or attachment, something like that? And third point is right words. Did you use the right words? Did you make any slandering or make bad words of others or something like that? And fourth point is the right actions. If you did the right actions without doing bad things. And fifth point is right will, right life. So your lifestyle was healthy and nice or not. And sixth path is right effort. If you extend the right effort or something. And seventh path is right concentrations. If you try to right ideals, and have you keep having such correct ideals during your day or something like that. And the final point is right meditations. So all these eight paths are the points we may need to reflect. It may be a little bit difficult, but this is one of the examples.
Yeah. Well, it may be difficult, but a lot of these challenging experiences are certainly, most of the time, they're pretty much worth the effort put forth as well. And before we wrap up, the fourth point, the fourth principle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to cascade one into the other. It's like they may be separate principles, but they're intertwined with one another.
Yeah, that absolutely. So as you practice first three principles correctly, you naturally grow and you will naturally improve. And other people may become happier and you become happier.
Mm-hmm.
So by practicing principle of love, principle of wisdom, and principle of self-reflection, you can achieve practice principle of progress.
Mm.
All these four principles are interrelated. And
And as you were saying, if you're practicing the first three, you're actually practicing the fourth at the same time.
Yes. Yes.
So you don't have to really think too much about the progress of your life. If you're doing those aspects of sharing love and seeking wisdom and then self-reflection, you're bound to grow. One of the other aspects of this growth process, too, I found rather interesting is the aspect of bringing closer to you people who, as you say, may become happier and so forth, may like what you're doing and how you're doing it and so forth, and want to find out more. And then there will be others who are going to push away. They're not going to want to have anything to do with you. And so you almost maybe involuntarily, you sort of weed out people from your life that are not going to at least be, if not supportive, at least they will be a part of your life. They will still stay in your realm of family and friends and acquaintances. And I think that that's extremely important aspect in terms of surrounding ourselves with people who, at the very least, will allow us to be who we are. Because there are too many people out there. They don't like the changes that we're going through. And it's just as well that they move on and find other people that are like them, if that's what they desire. Because I want to grow. I want to expand. I want to be better than I was yesterday.
Yeah. So, well, in terms of a principle of progress, of course, it is important for us to have a dream of ideals, and including the spreading happiness.
Yes.
And to other people. So, in order for us to achieve that, you can be a good kind of a testimonial or kind of a living proof that you become happier. Then by looking at you, probably people around you may realize something. That is very important, I think. So even though some people may not be interested in improving themselves, but if you can share the happiness, how nice it is for you to improve yourself, how nice it is for you to self-reflect and become, you feel lighter than before, then people may be interested in practicing all these things. That must be the process we can spread happiness around us.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you, what is the difference, and we're sort of now playing maybe semantics here, but the difference between bliss, joy, and happiness.
Well, bliss is more related with the serenity and peace. And whenever you meditate deeply, tuning your mind to the spirit world, you will receive strong light. And you feel kind of overwhelmed, but you can feel bright, shining happiness. Sorry, it's difficult for me to express nicely in English, but the word bliss is related to such a moment. Joy. Joy, of course, you feel joy in such a peaceful moment, but whenever you make efforts and achieve something, you can feel joy.
I'm curious as to what is the word in Japanese for happiness?
Oh, okay. In easier way, shiawase, and we call, and more literally, kofuku, happiness. Kofuku.
Kofuku?
Kofuku, yes.
Kofuku.
Kofuku. Yes.
We're talking about the happy science, and we're talking with Hiroshi Ayata and Ayata, and we're just about out of time, and I want to thank you so much for taking so much time sharing with us these principles of love, wisdom, self-reflection, and growth or progress, and sharing with us also about the heart of work. And hopefully we can sort of transform our own hearts to better love the work that we're doing. I know that that's another aspect that we haven't had a chance to get into, as opposed to changing jobs to something that you love doing. Why not change your perspective of what you're doing now and become a part of that? It would save a lot of time, I think.
Yes, and this is the important point regarding the jobs. So Master Oka, Ryuhoka says that this is very important, find your calling, and suggest people to try to search the jobs, even to thinking about changing job. But as you pointed out, if you only change your perspective, you can find out your calling, even in your workplace. That is what I experienced, actually. Yeah, rather than making money, I started to focus on making others happier. I feel pleasure and happiness, and my job became smoother, and I became successful. And that led me to change my job now, and spread happiness right now.
Yeah. And I think, as far as the laws of the universe are concerned, that in many cases, when you do that, a lot of that other stuff can sometimes follow.
So right, absolutely.
You don't have to think about it, because if you're living in that place of happiness and you're sharing love and so forth and you're trying to make others happy and bring joy to their lives, gee, the universe is just kind of looking at you going, hey, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, let's polish that stone a little more. Let's see what we can do. Because then the universe is sort of giving you, if you will, the resources to help others to be even more happy. And it doesn't mean you're handing out dollar bills per se, but maybe you're doing other things with the resources that you're allowed, that you're given. I think there's another, and again, I can only come from the biblical perspective because of my upbringing, but there's another biblical passage that says, to whom much is given, much is required.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we are given more, you know, we give to others in whatever fashion we can, especially when it comes to giving happiness. Hey, gee, you know, it's just reciprocal, and it's a wonderful thing. That's what I call unconditional love.
Great.
Hey, Roshi, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it. The website again is happy-science.org, happy-science.org. And I want to thank you again. And I invite you, if you should ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to continue this conversation in studio.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Wonderful.
I would pop in. Yeah.
If I may ask you three final questions, and then we're going to go ahead and close out the program. Three final questions, and I will do my utmost to pronounce it correctly. Who is Hiroshi Ayata?
Oh. I'm the person who seeks the dream to create happiest world.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, to create a lot of people with a smiling faces and peace.
And finally, and this is almost redundant because of your answers thus far, but what is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is thoroughly pursue my mission to deepen my happiness and spread happiness, true happiness throughout this world.
Again, I thank you so much for sharing your time with us, and I hope one day we do get to meet in person.
Yes, sure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.